Welcome to the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. Thank you, folks, for joining us. My name is Bob Griswold.
Mary Griswold.
Alan Harrer.
Pat Park.
Kim Fink.
Glenn Fink.
Well, welcome. Welcome, everybody. Now, we're going to start off, I think we're going to start off by saying, hey, what happened to Jack Smith?
Gee, I wish I had better news, but he's still around.
Darn it.
I read he might go back. Before he was tapped to do this special prosecution for Trump, he was living and working in Belgium at The Hague, where we don't have an extradition treaty, as Mary pointed out. Maybe he's going to leave because he said he's resigning. Didn't I read resigning December 17th?
I don't know the date. Something like, yes.
Yeah. He's not waiting till January 20th.
Not too far into the future, yes.
Right. But he's not waiting till the 20th. He filed a motion to dismiss the two cases that he had against Trump. They're both federal cases. One of them is the Mar-a-Lago raid, and the other is the insurrection case, the one that he did up in D.C. So the cases were pending in front of this Tanya Chutkan. And she, you know, when Trump was in her courtroom, she refused to call him President Trump. She called him Mr. Trump, and she made sure that he knew that she was specifically dissing him, that he didn't deserve to be called president in her courtroom. You can tell from her reaction to this motion to dismiss from Jack Smith that she's hoping that the charges will be refiled in 4 years once Trump leaves office. What happened is he filed a motion to dismiss without prejudice. So you can dismiss charges with or without prejudice. If you dismiss them with prejudice, it means they can never be refiled again. These were dismissed without prejudice, and the judge pointed out that these could be refiled in 4 years. Of course, you still have to worry about statute of limitations.
I just want to mention something about Jack Smith. He was the prosecutor against Virginia Republican government Robert McDonnell, who was charged with violating federal bribery law. That conviction was unanimously overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court. So Jack Smith's record of political prosecutions is there.
Well, you remember Andrew Weissman from the Mueller
team?
Yes. He has the same reputation. He had a case also unanimously thrown out. These guys are zealots. They use the law to go after political enemies, and they're not above twisting and straining the law to achieve a political outcome. And when you finally get the case in front of some jurists that don't have their head up the political spout, they throw them out.
Is there a role of the Bar Association in dealing with lawyers like this?
Well, somebody would have to file a bar complaint, and it would have to specifically allege a violation of precepts of that particular state's bar.
Wasn't my understanding that Jack Smith got appointed for that prosecution? Didn't somebody tell him to go after Trump in this?
Well, the reason you would appoint him would be because of his past history.
I'm just saying that there's somebody higher than Smith that put him on the task.
Well, he was Garland.
Attorney General.
Merrick Garland did.
Merrick Garland.
Yeah,
that's my point.
He was not appointed as an impartial prosecutor.
Right. I'm just saying that it went deeper than a zealot attorney. It was the Merrick Garland and the Biden-Harris administration.
Yeah, the politics were there.
Yes.
The zealots were there. He's a zealot. They needed a zealot to step in and do the legal part. He's a zealot who's a lawyer who can do the legal part. Boom, there he is.
And he did not withdraw these charges because he thought that was the right thing to do. He had no choice.
No, he did
the district the Department of Justice has a rule, I suppose, whether they follow
policy.
Not that policy, rule, whatever, that they do not prosecute a sitting president. And now that Donald Trump's been elected, they had no choice. It wasn't because Jack Smith's had a revelation.
No, he just had,
his hand got forced.
I agree.
Otherwise, he'd still be taking this thing to the
All
to
I'm
the mat.
Trying to say is that Merrick Garland's hands are not clean.
Not in the slightest, no.
Oh, no, but this was directed by Biden.
I agree.
Merrick was just the handmaiden of Biden. So this came from the very top.
I agree.
So there won't be any justice.
No.
Or whoever was controlling Biden.
That's more accurate.
Now, we don't have the answer to this, but I'm just going to ask. Do you feel that this case will be brought up again in 4 years?
Well, it's hard to say what's going to happen in 4 years because the politics move so fast, and this case is wrought with a lot of emotion, and emotion passes. And the politics change. And in 4 years, nobody may give a hoot about this whole thing. We may have a new crisis to consume ourselves with.
I think there's an interesting thing that came up this week. I don't think there's any conclusion to it, but apparently the former police chief of Washington, D.C. forces that was summarily fired right after January 6th, he apparently had properly asked for the National Guard forces to come in, and he was run through the bureaucracy to say, well, you got to ask so-and-so, and then they have to ask so-and-so, but we have to ask so blah, blah, blah. And so nothing happened in a timely manner. And so he was summarily fired and not long enough to get his pension. So he's willing to write the book. He's willing to spill the beans, I guess.
Well, back to Jack Smith's reason for dismissing it. He put in his motion that it wasn't because the evidence was lacking or that it was an important case or that the government had lost faith in its evidence. He said none of that was the case. It was just the policy.
And hopefully, as you mentioned, Pat, the statute of limitations may expire 4 years from now. But beyond that, hopefully, if we have a continuation of Republican administration, through J.D. Vance or some other Republican, then the Justice Department is not going to pursue it. So, and that's an unfortunate thing that we're at in this country, where it depends on who's in office and their political affiliation as to whether someone is charged with a crime.
Well, the one that I'm worried about in New York, the 35 felonies, where Judge Merchan was supposed to rule on whether or not the Supreme Court immunity ruling had affected the case to the point where it deserved to be dismissed. He kept putting that off. Then he put it off indefinitely. They're allowing Trump's team to file another motion to dismiss the case. He hasn't been sentenced, so it's hard to appeal when you haven't been sentenced. You don't have a final decree, so you have interlocutory appeals, right? So the fact that he hasn't been sentenced and they're doing all this mishmash about, well, should we rule on whether immunity affected the quality of the case? Well, I don't know. I think Merchan can see the handwriting that if he were to rule fairly on that question, he would have to dismiss the case. It would have to be a new trial. It would have to be a mistrial.
Well, I can only hope that there are bigger issues in this country that we're not going to get bogged down in this nonsense anymore. That's my hope.
I didn't get to what I was concerned with yet, Alan, and that is they're saying, let's put the sentencing off for 4 years. Let's wait till 2029 to sentence him on a current criminal case that in the meantime will just hang in limbo in state court. I have never, ever heard of that. I can't believe that that would be constitutional. And the fact that they're even discussing it, boggles my mind. So I'm more concerned about the two state cases, the New York one, well, let's wait 4 years and then we'll sentence him. Oh, yeah, I'm President Trump, and I'm coming out, and I'm hoping that Vance gets elected so they don't go after me for Mar-a-Lago and insurrection, and that Judge Merchan, Alvin Bragg is still around to bring back that case.
And
it has to be resolved. See, it can't just hang there in perpetuity. It has to either be a done case or an in...
Dismissed or...
Right. Done or not done.
Yeah.
And what about Georgia?
And then Georgia, she says, well, the justice bus is coming for him. You know, I'm not, as long as I'm in office, blah, blah, blah. Well, she just got reelected, and I think it's a six-year term or something. So she'll still be around when Trump's term is up. since he can't pardon himself for a state crime, he can pardon himself before he leaves office, he could pardon himself for the federal crime. So even if they try to bring him back, he's been pardoned. But he can't do that for a state case. And
can the governor do that for a state case?
Yeah, the governor can, but they're both Democrats. Mm. So that's not on the horizon.
The governor of Georgia is a Democrat?
No.
I thought it was Kemp.
No, Kemp. No.
Well, he might as well
he's
be.
He's a hidden Democrat.
Yeah, okay.
Yes. Excuse me for
telling the truth.
Being confused that he was a Republican.
Alan, you wanted to sneak in something quickly on
well, I think it's going to take more time than just, but I can introduce the topic.
Okay.
This whole thing of what's going on in the election brings up an issue that I'm really concerned about, and that is the duration of time between the election and the inauguration. This year, it was 76 days. And in other countries, like in England, it's a matter of days. 4 or 5 days later, you have a new administration come in, the old prime minister's out, and you know, then the new one comes to office. So, you know, maybe that's a topic we can, you know, discuss a little further after the break, but I think it's really problematic. There's so many things going on in the world and in the country, and you can see the different things that the Biden administration is trying to ram through here at the end, which, given 76 days, they're having an opportunity to do it. And we could talk about, you know, some of those things.
And we also truly, truly wonder whether he's attempting to start a war right now. And
well, that's
that we could go
up the war. We're already war. At war.
We're at war, yes. Okay.
The one thing, and I know we got to get to break, but the one thing is you can't instantaneously get your leadership in place. But they could speed up that process of confirming people that I guess doesn't start till the 20th.
They do it in England.
So why
they do it in England.
You know, so, well.
But if you
they,
knew,
they
let's
don't
say.
Don't have a constitution.
Let's say you were running for the, understand, but say you were running for the, for president. You would have those people lined up. So if you, when you did get elected, you would be prepared if you knew what the time frame was.
Of course, we didn't know that 8 years ago when President Trump started. 8 years ago, he had no idea who the right people were. Folks, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. Again, this is CCTA Wake Up Call Show. Thank you for listening. Stop in at East 70 Point for great deals. Drew and his knowledgeable staff have been serving the New Bern area since 1989. We always try to help our customers with friendly and honest service. Our crew is what sets us apart. Treating folks like how we want to be treated is our standard. People appreciate great service plus great prices, and that's what we're all about. Our shop is like no other. We specialize in guns, jewelry, and ammo, but we have so much more. We have the largest selection of new and used firearms, coins, collectibles, musical instruments, and tools. Our new jewelry selection is growing daily. Find us at 3317 Highway 70 East of New Bern. We're open Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. and Saturday, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Also, check out our website for many, many collectibles, east70pawn.com. East 70 Pawn is your one-stop shop to buy, sell, trade, or cash loans quickly, conveniently, and confidentially.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked to order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in Newbern, Winterville, Moorhead City, Swansboro, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in Newbern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, Newbern.
Welcome back. And again, thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Alan, you wanted to continue on this.
Yeah, Bob, I'd just like to say a couple things about it. Just historically, the period of time between the election of a president and the inauguration was set by the founding fathers for March 4th. Election in November, and it was set on March 4th. And that was and is it's in the Constitution, so it's not easily changed. However, in 1934, during the Depression, there was an effort made to change that, and they were successful. They changed it from March 4th to January 20th, and it went through the process of two-thirds of Congress and then three-quarters of the states had to endorse it, and they got that done. So it can be changed. It's not easy, but it can be changed. Now, the question is, should it be changed? Now, I think if you look back at why March 4th was originally set, it probably had to do with the status of communications, travel, transportation. Things didn't move faster then, and, you know, when the late 1700s, early 1800s, because of those factors. Now, of course, the world's completely different. It's communication is much faster, transportation, everything can be speeded up. Now, why should we be concerned about it? Well, all you have to do is look what the Biden administration's doing in a number of areas during this interim period. One thing they're doing is they're rushing through a group of very leftist federal judges. And these are federal judges that have lifetime appointments. In fact, they were interviewing one in the Senate the other day, and Senator Kennedy came out. And he pointed out that this particular judge, she had written something a couple years ago where she basically said that people who are in minorities, blacks, browns, Hispanics, purple, whatever, LGBT, whatever, they should not go to prison because
under any circumstance,
because their background and the things they've had to deal with should make them immune from it. And there's a judge that's going to get a lifetime appointment that doesn't believe that defendants who are guilty of crimes should be punished with imprisonment. I mean, this is the kind of people that are being rushed through. And there's other thing. Now, the other thing Biden's doing, he's allowing these people who go before the ICE. If you're coming over the border and you are identified by the ICE people as someone who is suspicious, you used to have a face-to-face interaction. So he's changing that. Now they can do it by an app or something over the phone. And I think somebody has mentioned, or one of us mentioned earlier about what's going on in Ukraine. Right? Does anybody want to talk about what Biden's done in the last 2 weeks? Mm. About the rockets, remember? He would not allow the missiles for a long time. Ukraine wanted to use these missiles to fire deep inside Russia. And there was concern that that would provoke an even stronger response on the part of Russia.
Which it has.
Now, in the last week or so, after the election, Biden has now come forward and said, okay, we'll do that. Well, what if he had said, well, we'll start using tactical nuclear weapons?
They've already suggested that we give them nuclear weapons for defense.
There you go. So this period of time, now you got 76 days, that outgoing administration has very few restrictions on them because they can do whatever they want. Now, you could sue them later and say that they were outside their authority, but the point is it's a tremendous risk to have some person who's been voted out of office. The people don't want what that person stands for, and yet that person's in office for almost 3 months.
So what you're saying is sort of like at a company, we are dismissing you from the company, and we're going to put somebody else in your office. Right. But you got 2 months or 2.5 months to go and
wreak havoc,
yeah. Right.
Yeah, and steal all the supplies.
And like I said earlier, and like in England, they take 5 days on average between changing one administration to another. Now, you might say, well, how would they get prepared that quickly? If you knew what your time frame was, you could be prepared. You could also carry certain people over temporarily in these agencies to manage them until you put your people in. It's doable. But this long period of time is really scary. And I've never seen as many things going on now as I have, in the previous years.
Didn't Trump leave people in place the first time he got elected?
Yes.
Yeah, look
all over the place because he didn't have people to go in there. He didn't know people.
Yes.
And that was not a good thing.
What I'm saying is you can leave them temporarily. It doesn't mean that you've got to change every head of every department within 5 days. What you do is you look at the most critical things, you take those changes, and the other people you take out as you get around to it.
Of course,
the problem with this, though, we've still got people in California counting votes.
Mississippi's still counting.
Yeah. So I like your idea.
They're running out of feet, though.
But Mary, that's a solvable problem. It wasn't always like that. To now turn around and say, well, we have problems getting the votes in the election, so we have to continue to have this long delay. You just make it so that they have to have their results.
So you're going with the traditional perception of an accountant. What answer do you want?
Yeah.
Does Congress have any bearing to keep the Biden administration from, like as Pat suggested, giving nuclear weapons as defense? Is there any way to stop that? Because I agree. I think the fear of escalation into a war is.
As a military person, let me interrupt here. We've eroded the whole only Congress can declare war. Biden's running this as an executive war.
And also he's financing it through executive.
Yeah.
Not by a budget from Congress.
Yeah. We don't have any.
Congress should shut the money off and say, no, you get nothing.
We don't have any control over what Biden wants to do or whoever's running him.
But physically, somebody would have to say, okay, Mr. Smith, you go over to the warehouse where we store those XYZ whatevers. And ship them to whatever. Somebody can say no.
Well, it would either be the head of the Senate or the head of the House. The head of the Senate says this is not a war. You have to stop. This head of the House would have to say we're not financing you.
Yeah, and they could all have said that many months ago, years ago, and they haven't done it.
They have not done it.
This whole eroding the power to declare war
is
at issue here.
But Congress also understands that the mandate that was sent by the American people in the election of Trump means we don't want an escalated war. So maybe
they don't necessarily understand that.
But they're financed.
Ask them.
They're financed by the industrial
military
complex. They're financed as the.
Right.
And if you wanted to impeach him, it would take too long.
Exactly.
And what would be the point at this stage of the game?
But Pat's earlier point, I believe, was, we've had plenty of time to impeach if it was impeachable because it's gone on for months, years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not new.
No. And for him to out of peak, we lost the election. So, yeah, go ahead. Let's make sure Trump's been bragging that he can stop this war on day one. Let's make sure that he can't. And, in fact, maybe he never can. maybe we'll have some big conflagration and the whole world will blow up. And it'll all be his fault. It's ridiculous. And you can't count on anybody to do what's right for the country. You can only count on them doing whatever is in their own individual little interest.
And on top of that, Pat, is you have somebody still in office that it was obviously his own party decided he wasn't capable of running and being president, and now he's making decisions that could exterminate everybody in the world. He has the power right now with his finger on the button, the top nuclear button, to destroy the world.
So we're playing.
And he's sitting there in office for 76 days because we've got this.
So we're counting on Putin to have enough sense.
Exactly.
To realize this is not the route that Trump's going to go. It's only a couple of months. But he didn't do that because then he fired that big missile that we don't have the capacity to shoot down.
We have no defense for it. Yeah.
And he fired that and has been. France and the UK are talking about putting troops on the ground in Ukraine. And if they do that before Trump gets in, now we really are in World War III.
Because then you've got NATO involvement.
Well, we already have NATO involvement, but we don't have troops on the ground. We have money.
Yeah.
Some of it being used wisely, some of it being invested in certain pocketbooks.
Yeah.
Well, most of it's being laundered and coming back to the Democrats in the United States. You won't convince me that's not true.
Yes. But putting troops on the ground is, again, an escalation. And Putin's not stupid. He understands that when Trump comes into office, the economic screws are going to be put on Russia. So we really don't know how he's evaluating.
We already have economic screws on him, but his economy is roaring. All of this, let's don't buy oil from Russia or whatever. Somebody's buying oil from them, and they're not suffering.
But if America goes to drill, baby, drill, and the price of oil drops, how does that impact his economy?
I don't know, but that's not something that gives Trump leverage to do this on day one.
Right.
And perhaps the threatening to okay the use of the missiles. You know, once you give the missiles to Ukraine, what was keeping them from using them on the interior of Russia
anyway?
Other than the hope for future money so the spigot stays flowing.
Mm.
Well, maybe, you know, what we can hope for is that Putin looks at Trump coming in and looks at it as a way of him getting out of the war, too. They have the territory. He's captured his land. And at that point, he may be satisfied, get the status quo, set this ceasefire and the border where it is, where his troops are, and he can leave and still save face.
And then they'll say Trump is a Russian asset, and this was the deal all along.
Okay. Folks, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. Again, CCTA Wake Up Call Show. Thank you for listening.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
The God and Country Christian Alliance has a simple mission, but it is a profound one. They want to inform and educate the public on issues of moral and political concern. They want to restore the Judeo-Christian values upon which this nation was founded to all levels of government. And they want to encourage and activate pro-family voters. Simple, but not easy. The God and Country Christian Alliance meets the third Monday of every month at Moore's Barbecue on MLK in New Bern. Meetings begin promptly at 7 p.m. and end by 8:30. To enjoy dinner with the group before the meeting, arrive between 6 and 6:30. Both the food and the company are good. Meetings include speakers and discussion, and their annual banquets are legendary. Join them on the third Monday of each month for a refreshingly candid view of the world and our place in it.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? They're people like you, a photographer, someone that ran their own business, someone retired from the military, just people in the community that love this country and have a desire to do their part to lower taxes and shrink government, to protect individual liberty, and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. We welcome you to come out to a meeting. If you like what you see and hear, there's a place where you can contribute to the cause. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. The group meets every third Tuesday at Stanley Hall Ballroom in downtown New Bern to enjoy a fantastic speaker and report on CCTA activity since the last meeting. If you've been disappointed with rising taxes and government intrusion, don't just complain. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.
Welcome back, folks, and we're going to head in a totally different direction. Now, Mary, what direction did you...
There's a segue for you.
That's okay.
We're worried about a segue. There's one.
I just want to talk a little bit about what's going on continually in Western North Carolina. There are still people that don't have a warm place to live. The Amish came in and built tiny houses for people. But somebody in the government of North Carolina has decided that those houses don't meet the building code, and the people are back in tents. And it's getting cold out there. That's just not right. And it seems to me that maybe it doesn't meet the code, but if it keeps the family warm and out of the elements, it's better than a tent.
Well, the irritating thing is the state of journalism, what code? Would somebody explain why this house built by the Amish, and I think we can all attest that the Amish build well. They can put up a barn in, what, a day? It took them 5 days to build these little houses. They had alternating work teams coming in, one every 5 days, build a house, send in the new team, build another house, send in the new team. And they've built multiple homes. And FEMA said they don't meet code. I guess if you're depending on FEMA for whatever services you're getting over there, if they say they don't meet code, you have to get out. But what code?
And these are supposed to be temporary housing. It's not the permanent replacement where they're going to live. But if you're talking about building code, it's everything from how far apart you have to have your receptacles, your electrical receptacles, and that kind of minutia, that if you're just trying to get out of a tent and into shelter, you're not worried about that as an individual.
And I would immediately say, throw some of those illegals out of their whatever they're staying in and give that to the folks that were displaced out in Western North Carolina.
Well, part of the problem is that many of the people out there are reluctant to leave their land, because they have things on their land that they care about, and they don't want somebody coming in and squatting or doing something like that. And that's part of the problem. But the fact that we've still got people living in tents months later, while we've got illegals in hotels in New York City paid for by taxpayers, something is wrong with our priorities.
Absolutely. And in the state of North Carolina, you said somebody in the state connected with FEMA. Who would that be? Who would we call to complain to that these people?
Well, it happened in Mitchell County. Now, to what extent the officials in Mitchell County had anything to do with this, because the counties enforce the building codes normally. Now, whether if it's FEMA involved, I don't know, but I understand that this is taking place in Mitchell County, so whether it's officials there or not. But to me, it reflects this whole gradual giving up of our freedoms to these bureaucrats, these agencies Now they're dictating to you, well, okay, your house was destroyed. Let's say you wanted to build your own little shed or your shack or whatever you wanted to do. They come, well, that doesn't meet code. You can't do that. So, you know, they put you back in a tent. But the point is, shows you how we've given up our freedom and we're just manipulated and managed by all these rules and regulations. And I hope that Trump and his team of, you know, with Musk and Ramaswamy or whatever his name is, they come in, they're going to hit those regulations. That's part of one of the things they want to really do is reduce them, and it needs to be done.
But the point is, it's winter, and these people need some shelter, and a tent isn't going to give them the shelter.
I agree.
That they need.
And the bureaucrats who say you can't live in this particular shelter or this building because it doesn't meet code, they don't care what happens to you. They're not concerned about you, that you don't have a place to live at all. They're just, quote, they're doing their job, enforcing the rules. And
we
therein lies the problem.
Every bureaucrat who's in charge of providing shelter for these people to live in a tent until every person impacted is living in a home. And then they can go live in their hotels. That might change the speed at which this has done.
You know, rolling the clock back, and I can't remember whether it was to 1989 or 1991 when the earthquake went through San Francisco, and they put out incentives to rebuild, quote,
yes,
the five. And the incentives were you got paid extra money if you built it early, okay? And all of a sudden, roadways got built where they weren't before, and permits somehow got made, the proper permits and everything like that got made. So everything was put back relatively normal very, very quickly.
But to go with what Alan was saying about losing the freedoms of the bureaucracy, I never really thought about it in that context until he just stated that. But if you think about construction here and now, even in our county, and Bob and Mary, when you built this house, you have to get a building permit. Then you have to get your sewer and water, and then you got to get an electrical permit, and you got to get a plumbing permit. And then after all that's done, and your contractor has to have a license and a permit, you go through all of those, and then you still have to get an occupancy permit.
I mean, you need inspectors to come in and say, oh, yes, they did it according to what I want. Not necessarily what the building code says, but what the inspector wants.
And even when we put the patio out back, we had to report that to the city.
That's so they could properly tax you.
You're correct.
Yes. Your increased property value.
Yeah, and if we hadn't done that, we would have been hit with a retroactive tax at some time in the future when we sold the house. So you don't have the freedom to do what you want.
Well, so it's not about life at this point. It's about the bureaucrats is the point that we're all making.
They determine what they think you should be doing, and they make sure you do. It's like the water you had mentioned earlier, Bob, when we were off air about the amount of water flow that you can get from a shower head now, or the amount of water that it takes to flush a toilet. Those are determined by these bureaucrats. That should be your decision. If you want to use a lot of water up in your shower, that should be your decision. Not some bureaucrat who thinks, well, you know, we got to restrict that. But if you change those things, then you're violating the code, and they won't approve your occupancy permit.
Craziness.
And the plumber will not take that little thing out of your shower head that restricts the water. But if you got a really good plumber, he'll tell you how to do it.
Where are we going to go?
I want to talk about Benjamin Netanyahu and his defense minister, Gallant, about the fact that the International Criminal Court has put out a warrant for their arrest, charging them with crimes against humanity. Well, this is kind of interesting because if you've been paying attention since October of last year, Israel has done everything it could to prevent civilian casualties It has brought food trucks into Gaza, knowing that the goods would be stolen by Hamas, which they have been. And it has gone out of its way to avoid a humanitarian crisis. Meanwhile, Gaza Hamas is using civilians as human shields. They're sending rockets into civilized areas, civilian areas of Israel, not military targets. Obviously, they attacked civilians on October 7th. They did not attack military targets.
Now, who controls the International Criminal Court?
I don't know.
Well, given the influence that China is having on all these international agencies like the UN, you go through the UN, it's not what the UN was originally determined to be. And whether it's China or some other country like that that's controlling the ICC, I don't know, but it wouldn't surprise me if they were behind it.
Well, what about the people that... Well, I guess most of them are dead now. I was going to say the leaders that were behind the attack on the Israelis, most of them have been terminated. So, but the point remains, the ICC should be going after who started this war because they were responsible for what's happened since.
Well, I think there's a framework that needs to be looked at, and that is war a matter for countries and their national policy, or is this something else that we've reduced to a criminal case? So we're going to make judges in the International Criminal Court the arbiters of what Israel can and cannot do in its own self-defense, rather than Israel and any allies that it recruits to its side, like traditional warfare. I mean, we're supposedly on Israel's side. We seem to be trying to be on both sides, but there are some countries. The Ayatollah has called for Netanyahu's execution.
But you know, war is people die and you break things. I don't know that I would say that there's any real humanitarian effort going on in war itself.
No, I'm not talking about humanitarian. I'm talking about reducing war, which is cataclysmic and is normally the result of foreign policies between nations, nation states, to a bunch of bureaucrats in an international criminal court. It's not their say.
You know, and you're right, Pat, exactly. And the thing is, this, to me, reflects this whole move towards globalization, where countries give up their own rights and their own independence to these courts, or, for example, some of these agreements about the environment, where you give up your rights to determine your own fate because you're giving it up. And then you don't control who those people are. We don't even know who's controlling the courts. You don't know who's controlling these Green New Deal, or these environmental groups that are controlling what you can do with your energy.
You know, back many, many years ago, for those that remember the old original Star Trek, I think it was, there was a show where Star Trek and many, many, quote, worlds or nations had decided, rather than destroying property, what we'll do is we'll play a chess game, and the winner will then decide how many people to eliminate from the other country and go back and forth. And this was a Star Trek
episode.
That went crazy.
And when you reduced it to that and made it, number one, it looked ridiculous, and number two, when you thought about the instrumentation of actually killing that number of people. Well, it's your turn. We have to kill 10 people. We've decided you're one of the 10.
You're one of the 10.
Yeah.
Folks, we're going to take another quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. Again, this is CCTA Wake Up Call.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked to order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in New Bern, Winterville, Moorhead City, Swansboro, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
County Compass is a rapidly growing, free, weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news. Coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
Welcome back, and again, thank you for listening to the sponsors and supporters. Now, where do we want to head off to?
I just want to mention a few things about the International Criminal Court. It was established in 2002. It is an outgrowth of the Paris Treaty Peace Agreement of 1919. We all know how well that turned out. And it is it was drafted originally as part of the UN Security Council, so it's tied to the UN.
Enough said.
Yeah, okay. So that's kind of where
Bad
that
guys.
Is.
Now, Alan, you were going to bring up the, we're going to usher people out of the country?
Well, yeah, sure. Thanks, Bob,
nice
for the
words,
segue.
Bob.
Very nice. Getting very good at that. But anyway, there, obviously, you know, when Trump was during his election campaign, he really was stressing one of the major issues was closing the border and deporting people. And this Tom Homan that he has recommended to be his, what is
Border Czar.
Well, I know, but he has a more official title on it. But anyway, he's going to be in charge of the border and so on. But anyhow, but he's talking about the really getting serious about it. And when you listen to him, he is serious. And I think Trump's serious about it. But you see all kinds of reactions from the Democrats and the sanctuary states like California. And you mentioned about Denver. You want to talk about that?
The mayor of Denver, his name is Mike Johnston, is anticipating like 50,000 Denverites plus the state and local police all standing there athwart the federal immigration authorities or the military, whoever Homan gets to send in to get these illegals, and he's willing to throw down because that's he said we will have a Tiananmen Square moment. Does anybody hear Civil War? And whose side are the Democrats on? And people that aren't even from here?
Where's he going to find these 50,000 people?
Well, Democrats.
And the Democrats are the ones that were accusing Trump of insurrection.
Yeah.
This would be insurrection.
It would be.
Because it would be an armed rebellion against the legitimate role of the federal government, which constitutionally is responsible for the border, not the individual states. It's theoretically the, not theoretically, but actually the federal responsibility. So if he's tried to block that, which is what he's planning on doing, and now he's backing off a little bit and saying, well, if they just deport the criminals, maybe that'll be okay.
I'm just saying there's other ways to do this besides deportation. No, there's not.
No, I don't think there is either. And I'm sure, and I hope that the President Trump will go way beyond the criminal element. These illegals need to be moved out of this country, not just the 20,000 they can identify have prior crimes. It needs to go after all of them, in my opinion.
Of course, the question is, how do you deport all these millions of people all at once? Well, you don't. You pick on certain cases, like those that are creating a crime today. They are gone tomorrow or today, if possible. And you pick on somebody that is picking, that is doing the crimes. You're doing sequentially, you're picking on the worst. And as, what's his name?
Homan.
He was asked, well, how are you going to do, what are you going to do about separating family? No, we'll deport the whole family. Fine. Yeah. That's great. I fully agree with that.
Yeah, I agree with that. Keep the family intact. But the other thing is that when you start this process, you always have to look at what are the incentives keeping these people here. What is it? Being able to access social services, getting food stamps, getting all these benefits. You take those away. Don't allow them to have driver's licenses. No state should be allowed to do that. And then you start restricting. You should not be able to employ them. They're here illegally. So they'll have to go back. They might be coming up and saying, well, yeah, ship me back. I'm ready to go. So you motivate them to go back on their own by taking away the rewards for being here that the Biden administration put in.
Also, how many of these illegals have committed a crime, been let out of jail, and committed another crime?
And think about the growing criminal activity in gangs. And if you take out some of these gangs, because every locality knows who their criminal element is.
Yes.
They should.
Well, when Trump was president first time, he concentrated on MS-13 gang. This time, he's going to be concentrating on Tren de Agua from Venezuela, who are taking over these apartment buildings.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to be, you know, Venezuela, the crime rate went down 70% after they shipped all their criminals.
Yeah, came here.
To America.
And, you know, it was said it is much easier to get and export a person who is incarcerated right now than it is to go out and try to find them.
Right. And that's what Homan says. Okay, Mr. Johnston in Denver. It's much safer for our law enforcement to go to the jail and pick them up from other law enforcement, take custody of them. But if you'd rather we go back to workplace raids and finding them in their homes, where we have to go into the community and
disrupt.
Mm-hmm. Not only disrupt, but be
be exposed.
Invasive.
Exposed to crimes against our persons. But, you know, this is, you know, what goes around comes around. If you remember back when in Arizona, Arizona was trying to make immigration enforcement a quasi-state issue. And it went up to the Supreme Court and it said, no, it's federal. Federal takes precedence. Okay, so now here we come with the feds. Oh, no, we're gonna set up state agencies to save them from you. Well, no, you tried that the first time, and now you're stuck with it because you've got a U.S. Supreme Court decision that says, no, it belongs to the federal government alone.
See, and then you wonder, let's say, for example, you have a sanctuary city like Denver or one of these other places that says, no, we're not going to cooperate with ICE. We're not going to turn these people. We're going to resist. Cut off federal funds to them. One of these sanctuary cities are getting tremendous amounts of federal funds for all kinds of things, education, social services, you name it. They're getting cut them off.
That's being discussed.
When you do then you motivate. And just discussed. Like Trump also announced, I think it was yesterday, that what he wants to do with Canada and Mexico, he wants to put a 25% tariff on everything coming from those countries into the United States.
But you know,
everything.
Talking
until they control the immigration.
What'll that do? That will make them very, very cooperative.
But talking,
that's what you got to do. You got to motivate them to be cooperative. Otherwise, you can't have success.
But talking about education as a means of accessing this, when the kids get registered for school, they don't have to maintain that they are a citizen or not. So if you say we're not going to hire teachers for English as a second language to non-English speaking students, that's an encouragement right there.
Yeah.
It's not that you are going to go to that student's home and arrest their parents because they're an illegal, but if you say if you don't speak English, you can't come to school here because we can't afford to hire you. Counties are having to hire teachers that could be better utilized in the masses than having to have all these foreign languages. And I remember in Craven County, the number of foreign language students, it was incredibly high, like I want to say 20.
And different languages,
and
yes.
20 different languages.
It's interesting that the North Carolina legislature just recently overrode Governor Cooper's veto of a law requiring sheriffs to cooperate with ICE in dealing with illegal immigrants. Right. So, at least in North Carolina, thanks to the legislature, not thanks to the governor, we are making some progress in that area.
They are required now to cooperate.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I agree with Alan, taking away those incentives all the way down to education. When it affects their children, mama's going to be a whole lot more concerned.
Mm-hmm. And let's take away the hotel rooms, the free hotel rooms,
and the
debit
cell phones.
Cards. And the, yeah.
Well, all I can say is Eisenhower deported 3 million people in the 1950s that were here illegally.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to hear any stories about it can't be done or whatever. If you have the courage and you have the intelligence to figure out how to get it done, you can solve it. It's a problem that has a solution. Just have to come up with a solution, and you have to have the courage to get it done.
Well, I think the numbers even more recently, I think there were several million that Obama
mm-hmm.
deported. So it's not just been done under a Republican leadership. It's been done under Democrat leadership, too.
I mean, the wall is not the perfect solution or the be-all and end-all, but finishing the wall will certainly be something of a deterrent to illegals just flowing freely across the border.
Deportation is not a death. Deportation just is a change of address. It is not like you deport grandma and your family is never going to see her again.
Mm-hmm.
If grandma has a son who is an American citizen, that son can go visit grandma anytime he wants to and come back to the U.S. And I don't see that as any different than an American family who has children spread across the United States, you see, once or twice a year. How is that any different? They broke the law. They don't deserve to be here. And I shouldn't have to pay for them to be here.
Agreed. And then, you know, if you look at the asylum laws, which are being abused, if you look at the asylum law, what it basically says, two very critical things. Number one, if you're leaving a country seeking asylum, it's because you're being persecuted for one of several reasons. Number one, your race, your religion, your nationality, membership in a specific group, or your political opinion. That's the basis. And you must stay in the first country you enter before you can come to the United States. So it's this stuff, and it's totally being ignored by the Biden administration. So that's another way of controlling it.
And deportation really has nothing to do with waiting for a hearing. You're here illegally. You can go and wait outside of this country for your hearing.
And remain in Mexico. That's what Trump did the first administration.
Yeah, first thing Biden undid.
Yeah, exactly.
Are we done?
I think we're pretty good. Anybody got a last comment? You got 10 seconds for last.
I hope everyone had a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Yes. And folks, again, thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters, and I ask you to go and frequent them, and you just have a great week. And as you prepare for the wonderful world of Christmas coming up, have fun shopping. This is CCT8 Wake Up Call Show. Thank you.